Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. After mounting pressure this week, Governor Ron DeSantis issued a stay-at-home order for the entire state of Florida to try to slow the spread of COVID-19. Now, DeSantis had resisted issuing this order for several weeks. He said he'd been taking his cues from the White House.
Hours after the governor issued the order on Wednesday, he signed another one that appeared to override some restrictions put in place by local governments. Some officials around the state have expressed frustration about all this, saying that Tallahassee is overriding their local attempts to protect citizens.
Now, the governor's office, though, says his second directive was mainly meant to block local governments from shuttering churches and synagogues during the outbreak. Under DeSantis's original order, religious services are considered an essential activity. We want to know your thoughts about the new Safer at Home order for Florida. We'll get to your calls in a few minutes. Dial us up from wherever you are in the state. The number 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup.
Later on in the program, in just a few moments, we will talk about Florida's Safer at Home order from U.S. Representative Donna Shalala, a Democrat from South Florida. But first, we welcome back to the program U.S. Representative Republican Greg Stube. He represents Florida's 17th District, and she joins us now. Representative Stube, welcome back to the Florida Roundup and Florida Public Radio. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Do you support the governor's statewide stay-at-home order that was issued this week?
Yeah, I do. I you know, the challenges are becoming what is, I mean, the moment he did it, my phone started blowing up as to who and what were specifically essential businesses. Some clarity from that, I think, would be good, and I think we've got some of those answers for folks in my district as to some guidance on that.
But tell me, Representative, where did that guidance come from? The governor's executive order talks about essential businesses and references a Department of Homeland Security, also references some definitions that Miami-Dade County put into place a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and so we sent that out on our social media sites and then in our email blast that we're going to send out today. That's the same guidance we use, but if you read more detailed, and we've also reached out to the governor's office to get more clarification as to the enforcement of that. I mean, I have businesses in my district that are construction related, but aren't necessarily construction, like land clearing or some things that could be in gray areas. So I reached out to local law enforcement. I represent 9 counties. I reached out to 2 of them to see exactly how local law enforcement intends to enforce this order, if at all. There was a call, and I should get a call this afternoon from the Sheriff's Association was doing a call today to statewide try to have some continuity across the state as to how they're enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarasota County, they were basically like, they're not, unless they had probable cause to pull a vehicle over, they weren't just randomly going to be pulling vehicles over, seeing if they were an essential business or not.
Right.
I know there were some jurisdictions that were going to be doing that. So it's really up to local law enforcement who's deemed under that order to enforce that as to how specifically in each county or city they're going to enforce that order.
Another county that you represent, portions of Charlotte County, closed recreational centers, pools, and libraries back on March 17th, a couple of weeks ago. Do you think the state should have acted and the governor should have acted earlier in a more comprehensive manner as opposed to this piecemeal local response that we saw for weeks building up to the governor's executive order this week?
You know, people tell me all the time when I would file bills that would preempt local government when I was in the state legislature that local government is best to deal with issues in their local municipalities and counties because they're the closest to the people. I think in this circumstance that each county making a determination on what is best for their county. I represent 9 counties, mm-hmm. and several of those counties still don't even have a single COVID-19 case or a test positive case. So obviously how a Highlands or DeSoto or Okeechobee County or Hardee County would want to deal with those issues should be up to them specifically with some guidance coming from the state.
Even so if they're only even if they're only a county or two away from Broward County or Palm Beach County, where we are seeing communities spread an outbreak.
Yeah, I think Palm Beach County and Broward County can make those determinations, which I believe they have. And each county should be making it up on their own. And if you look at what the governor did do, I don't see that it's much different than what we have been operating under statewide anyways. It didn't really make
too
many changes.
How so, Representative?
In my opinion, just about anything could be deemed essential. I mean, if you look at the list, it's a pretty long and exhaustive list.
Mm-hmm.
So if a small business wants to remain open and they're under one of those categories, I think that you'll see the operators try to operate to keep people employed if they can make a reasonable argument under the guidance that they can do that.
But there hadn't been that statewide guidance up until Wednesday of this week. You'd agree with that, right?
No. Yeah, I agree with that. I think the CDC guidance was pretty clear, and everything that we had been putting out was to follow CDC guidance.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the CDC guidance and medical supplies particularly, because on March 20th, you and a number of the Florida congressional delegation, both Republicans and Democrats, wrote a letter and sent it to Vice President Pence, who heads the federal government's COVID-19 response, asking to fulfill, quote, vital medical supplies. You included equipment and personnel, recovered the personal protective gear. Are you satisfied with the response that you have gotten and that Florida has gotten from that letter a couple of weeks ago?
I'm certainly not satisfied with the response that we're getting from suppliers. I think you've probably heard Jared Mouskowitz, the Department of Emergency Management Director for the state of Florida, talking about his frustrations with 3M and getting face masks.
Right.
One of the first things I did when I got back from D.C. was call every one of my hospital CEOs and every one of my county health department directors to find out what it is they were lacking and what it is that they needed. And all of them universally were saying the same thing. It was PPE, your personal protection equipment, which includes face masks and gowns and face shields. And it was the COVID-19 testing swab.
Right.
And that was a significant problem for our state early on. I immediately called the task force, and I'm happy to forward you these emails, too, because I reached out federally to the task force. We had already passed three bills. The very first bill, the $8.3 billion, dealt specifically with face shields and healthcare equipment and ventilators and those type of things. So the money was there, and things weren't getting distributed down to the state.
Right, and we heard about that.
The fact that we had
we heard about that just yesterday when the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, drew a distinction between the federal stockpile and supplies for the states, saying that it was our stockpile, referring our to the federal government. Do you agree with that distinction, that the federal government's not for states' distributions?
No, I think that the money that we appropriated, and in the Phase 3 bill, there were specific money specifically for the states to draw down monies for PPE and for healthcare-related items. And so my frustration has been that the healthcare facilities in my district have been struggling to get that type of information. And we find out yesterday Jared Mouskowitz was on Tucker Carlson last night talking about the fact that
Fox News Channel host,
trying
right?
to get face masks from. Yeah, he's been trying to. Well, Mouskowitz is a former Democrat. I served with him in the state house.
I think he's still a Democrat, Representative. I think he's still a Democrat.
Sure, and I think it's his frustration that 3M was selling the stuff, the PPE, to foreign governments.
Yeah, and we've heard other states complain about competition among states with these companies, that states are outbidding each other. Is there a role for the federal government to play in this as it tries to allocate?
Yeah, I thought that was my frustration in dealing with the issues we were dealing with in my district, and we were told to reach out to the task force, and the response that I got from the task force was, you need to reach out to your state DEM. Well, if we're appropriating all these dollars at the federal level, why are you directing me to the state DEM? That doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me. So, yeah, I have some frustration if we are appropriating dollars at the federal level specifically for these purposes, and these needs are not being met in the different jurisdictions throughout the country that need them, that's a problem.
Representative, finally, let me just ask you on the economic stimulus side. Today we saw the U.S. economy lost 701,000 jobs in March. We've seen tens of thousands of Floridians file and try to file for unemployment. The job destruction is likely going to be worse this month. Do you think that there's more federal stimulus spending that's needed?
What I've been saying and what our leadership has been saying is let's wait and see how this all, the $2.2 trillion that was just voted out of Congress, see how that deals with in the overall economy. Today was the first day that banks could actually draw down some of those funds for their small businesses. I was just on a conference call with Secretary Mnuchin, who said that
the Treasury Secretary,
instead of the individual, Yes, instead of those individual checks coming out in 3 weeks, it's now going to be two. So I think we need to see what type of response that $2.2 trillion is going to have. Give that a couple of weeks to a month to see what type of impact that's going to have for our small businesses, and then readdress it.
Representative Subi, we appreciate the time today. Always nice to talk with you, and we hope the best for you, your family, and your staff.
All right, thanks. You too.
Representative Republican Greg Stubbe, he represents Florida's 17th Congressional District.
Now we hear from the other side of the aisle. U.S. Representative Donna Shalala is a Democrat representing Florida's 27th district, Miami-Dade County. Shalala also served as Secretary of Health and Human Services for former President Bill Clinton, and she joins us now. Representative Shalala, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
You've been quite vocal in recent days slamming the federal response to the pandemic. You've called it delayed and chaotic. Are you more hopeful now for Florida now that the statewide lockdown has been issued here?
A little hopeful, but it has so many holes in it. I'm very concerned. I'm not as concerned about South Florida because our mayors have been pretty strong, but statewide, the governor has left a lot of holes.
Such as?
You know, it's just unfathomable that we don't have strong leadership in the middle of a terrible pandemic.
And when you say he's left holes, what are you referring to in particular? Are you referring to, for example, carve-outs for religious institutions? That's one that's gotten a lot of attention. Do you oppose that?
I do, but so does the leader of the Catholic Church in South Florida and the synagogues in South Florida. Any gathering place is a danger. It's a danger not only to those that gather, but to those that they have come in contact with and to our healthcare system. And there ought to be no reason why we ought to increase the burden on individuals or on institutions in our society, and the tragedy of the death that will come from this is just unacceptable.
Now, after some back and forth, we learned that a cruise ship carrying sick patients is going to dock in South Florida in your neck of the woods. You recently compared turning away those sick passengers to the U.S. turning away ships of Jews fleeing the Nazis during the Holocaust. Was that too strong a statement? Do you stand by it?
I do stand by it. I stand by anything that doesn't reflect the core values of Americans, and that is to reach out and help those in need, whether they're Americans or not. I haven't heard that England or France or Germany or Denmark are turning away Americans that are using their healthcare system and get sick from the coronavirus, but it's our core values. We help people that are in need. Now, we needed to set up a healthcare system to absorb those that were sick and those that might get sick in the future, and they did that. They worked it out with Broward County. But I'm not saying that we needed to bring people off the ship and let them expose other Floridians. I am saying that we needed to put a healthcare system in place and get people off those ships. And that's what we do as Americans.
We heard your counterpart on the Republican side of the aisle, Greg Stubbe, answer a question about whether more stimulus spending is needed to be passed through the Congress. What's your take on that? Will we see more relief coming from Washington to help the unemployed in Florida after this initial round of spending?
Absolutely. And I just heard Senator Collins from Maine, who shaped the small business piece with Marco Rubio. And she said that she thought that they probably hadn't put enough money into that piece to protect workers. And other senators that were on the call, Republicans and Democrats, said, we'll fill the gaps, whatever the gaps are. These bills were done quickly, and certainly we'll have gaps. Listen, our hospitals are bleeding money at this point, and the administration has been slow to get that money out. As soon as they do, we have to take a look and see whether we're still putting our hospitals at risk. They're not doing their regular business for the most part, their regular business, surgeries and other things that they've been able to put off are where they make their money, so that we have to be very careful about preserving first the people in our community and keeping them safe and healthy, and second, the institutions in our community that are so important to our health and safety in the long run. So,
well, yeah,
my
sure.
answer is yes, we're going to go back.
More stimulus. And, of course, strong feelings people are expressing right now about the carve-out for religious institutions in Florida. Christina is on the line from Boca. She has a quick comment on that. Hi, Christina. Your thoughts.
Hi, thank you. So I'm just happy that the state has finally caught up and decided to put a lockdown for the entire state. But I am really very concerned that religious institutions can still conduct their services.
So you think they should be shut down as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That is not an essential...
Not an essential service. Okay, Christina, we're close to a break, so I want to get Congresswoman Shalala to react to that. You're on the same page with her, Representative Shalala. Not everyone agrees with that, but that's where you are.
Yeah. I am, and most religious organizations are simply going to close down. The bishop of the Catholic Church in Miami, Dade, has already announced that. I noted that most of the synagogues, all the synagogues that I know of, are closed down. And, you know, we have always prayed as individuals. Some of the religious organizations are putting their services on television, we can watch it on the internet.
Sure.
I said Mass last Sunday and followed the Mass that was on my television screen. So we can do this, but there can't be any exception of large groups coming together.
We're getting an email about this from Mark in Mayport. From Article 1, Section 3 of the State Constitution, religious freedom shall not justify practices inconsistent with public morals, peace, or safety. He says it seems religious assemblies might put the safety of others at risk. With 1 minute or so till the break, Representative Shalala, what else are you doing to help constituents at this time and your colleagues as well? I know this has been a tense time in D.C., as it is for people everywhere around the country.
Yeah, I'm not worried about what we need to do in D.C. I'm worried about people in my community getting the information they need so that they can help their families. And that's financial information about unemployment insurance and about the SBA loans and grants that are going to be available, about putting off student loans, all of the information from the bills that we've done, the three bills that we've done. And that's what I'm focusing on with teletown meetings and other ways of communicating.
We thank you so much for participating and bringing this info to listeners all over Florida. Thanks for dropping in with us. She's Representative Donna Shalala, Democrat of South Florida. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
A few minutes ago, we also heard from Representative Greg Stube, Republican of Southwest Florida. And in a moment, we'll hear from all of you. How are you handling this new reality we're all living in as we deal with the response to COVID-19? 305-995-1800. Get on the line and tweet us at Florida Roundup. We'll go around the horn and hear from all cities across the state in just a moment. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. COVID-19 has been confirmed in almost every Florida county until Governor Ron DeSantis issued the statewide stay-at-home order that took effect at 12:01 a.m. today on this Friday. Local governments had some different rules across the state. You know, some had closed hotels more than a week ago. Some even kept beaches open last weekend, Melissa. Some communities...
Yeah.
are setting up field hospitals and preparing for more patients.
That's right. There's a field hospital going up outside the convention center in Jacksonville, for example. A photo got widely shared all over the country showing how in Jacksonville, Duval County, the beach was closed, but in the neighboring county, St. John's, it was open. And you could see all of the people on that beach right up to the county line and until that county finally closed. So we want to hear from wherever you are in Florida, because it's a big state and there are different reactions we're getting. How has your community responded to COVID-19? What are your thoughts about the lockdown taking effect today? Have you gotten tested? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup.
The pool guy is on line three. Let's hear from the pool guy. Welcome to the program here. How's business been?
Well, we're still working, and that's like part of the reason why I'm calling in. Well, most of the reason I'm calling in, because I don't see us as extremely essential, although a lot of people are using their pools now in this time of, you know, isolation and such. I just worry that not being essential, that we're being sent around doing stuff and being told by our superiors that we're supposed to be working, and some of us don't want to be.
Yeah.
And also,
are you taking social distancing precautions in the store as you're selling chlorine and tablets and those kinds of things?
Well, a lot of the guys that work at store are. I am one of the guys that goes out and cleans pools.
Ah.
And yes, of course, I'm doing that, and I'm wearing a mask and such.
Yeah.
But it just worries me that I'd rather keep my job, so I don't want to be making a fuss about shutting down or about not working.
Sure.
And I do enjoy the paycheck when a lot of people don't have it. So in one way, I'm privileged. But in another way, I kind of wish someone to do something, you know, kind of tell them maybe not the best thing to stay open.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the concept and the thoughts there. Be careful there cleaning those pools. We have seen pool stores be deemed essential businesses in some communities as the stay-at-home orders had been put into place throughout the communities, throughout Florida, before the statewide order, of course, was issued by the governor on Wednesday. Let's go around the state here as different folks have been dealing with COVID-19 for days and weeks here to check in with public media reporters across Florida to hear what these responses have been like. Katie Swetalski covers Broward County for WLRN here in Miami. Katie, Broward County is one of the hotspots for the infections. What's the testing been like?
Hey, Tom. So in Broward, we've done almost 14,500 tests. Those are all mainly drive-through at drive-through sites. And more than 1,500 of them have been positive so far. That's been recorded by the Florida Department of Health. And it's interesting, the drive-through testing sites, especially at one of our big parks, it's a problem for people who don't have cars or can't drive or don't have vehicles. The tests are all done through car windows. So at least Memorial Health is recommending for people who don't have cars to go to the emergency rooms. But testing is still only available for people who are either first responders with symptoms or people who have traveled or people 65 and older with symptoms.
Another big focus in Broward County has been the cruise ships, with Port Everglades being one of the busiest cruise ship ports in the world. How has the county responded to these ships with infected passengers and crews docking?
So two ships from Holland America docked last night, but it was after more than a week of the county commission debating with the unified command structure at the port. And the decision really came in the 11th hour. It was, you know, this moral argument against helping a humanitarian crisis versus, you know, we are one of the hotspots. How do we protect the people that are here and not overwhelm our own hospitals? Ultimately, they're allowed to come. About 13 were taken to Broward Health. And Broward Health actually released a statement this morning saying that, quote, some of them are in fair condition and some are in critical condition. And the passengers that are getting home, they're going to be getting home at Carnival's expense today and tomorrow.
Katie Swetalski, Broward County reporter at WLRN in Miami. Thank you, Katie, for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Steve Newborn joins us now from WUSF in Tampa. He's been covering COVID there. Hey, Steve.
Good afternoon, guys.
Thanks for being with us. You know, Tampa generated some national attention when a pastor in your neck of the woods was actually arrested for holding church services in violation of a citywide lockdown. What's been the discussion about that in Tampa, St. Pete?
Well, yeah, we made national headlines, unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons again. So the pastor's name is Rodney Howard Brown. He runs a mega church called the River Tampa Bay. And last Sunday, he held two services. This church is big. It holds several thousand people. And this came in violation of Hillsborough County's stay-at-home order, which has been in place for about 2 weeks now. So after the service was over, the sheriff's deputies went over there and arrested him. He got out on bail. And now it's kind of, it might be a moot case because of what the governor said yesterday about churches. He basically said that he believes that the government cannot close churches, doesn't have the power. And, of course, the rules of preemption mean that the state law supersedes local law. So the question here is whether he's going to go to court to answer these charges at all or whether the governor's actions make it all moot. It's kind of up in the air right now. Nobody really knows.
Right. This has caused a lot of confusion, hasn't it? The governor issued a second directive after his initial order saying he wanted a carve-out for religious institutions and that he believed shutting down churches would violate the Constitution. So that
right.
sort of leaves local officials, some of them anyway, have been scratching their heads.
Right. So Hillsborough County's Emergency Policy Group, it's a group of county commissioners, school board members, sheriff and such. They met yesterday, and this is before the governor came out with his directive, his second directive, and they basically thought that well, they didn't exactly know what to think. They ended up coming out with a message you're going to get to all churches saying, well, if you're going to stay open, just practice social distancing, right? We can't close you down, but please stay 6 feet apart. You know, it's really kind of hard to do in some of these places.
Mm-hmm.
And right across the bay, Pinellas County, they took a different tack. They thought that they were able to enact laws that were stricter than the governor's, and it's really open interpretation no matter where you are. So nobody really knows what's going on with the churches right now. It's very vague.
Yeah, clear as mud, but we will continue to follow it. Thank you for dropping in with us, Steve Newborn of WUSF in Tampa. Thanks.
Thank you.
Right across I-4 is WMFE Orlando, Brendan Byrne, joining us via Skype. Brendan, welcome back to the roundup here. Disney announced on Thursday that it was going to be laying off thousands of non-union workers. What's the latest that you know from Disney and obviously what's going to be the continued local impact from the parks being shut down?
Yeah, Tom, this is still a developing story here. What we know is that executive salary and non-union hourly workers are going to be furloughed. Disney does not know when it's going to open up again, which is why they had this move. We're still not sure what's going to happen with the union employees. They're meeting with union folks this afternoon. But as far as the economic impact, Disney here in Central Florida is our biggest employer. There's about 77,000 people are employed by Disney. And it's also kind of been like the bellwether of the reaction here in Central Florida. When Disney announced it was closing, Central Florida knew that something was serious and to take this thing serious. So the fact that they are furloughing all of these employees and it's really unsure when it's going to open up again, It's very concerning for Central Florida.
Another big industry that I know you cover is the space industry over on the Space Coast. NASA and its contractors, are they still working?
They are still working. They are working remotely. NASA has taken some protocols to stop the spread of this. Mission-critical things are still going on, so like commercial crew, right? NASA's ramping up to launch two U.S. astronauts on a SpaceX rocket this summer. Work is still happening on that, but other things have kind of slowed down a bit. Work on the SLS rocket and also some other things. I talked to the 45th Space Wing, which handles launches here. They don't expect any delays, but they will prioritize. So national security, then civil missions, and then commercial missions will be the priority list there.
What can you share with us around testing sites, and any increase in testing in the Orlando and Central Florida area?
So we have one drive-through testing site here. It's at the Orange County Convention Center, and they have kind of relaxed some of the limitations that you need to get tested. You need to have a fever and either show respiratory symptoms or have a pre-existing condition. They're limiting those to 250 tests a day. They opened at 9 o'clock this morning, and they closed at 9:07 this morning. So
they were open for 7 minutes, except
they were open for 7 minutes.
Wow.
Today. So that you can kind of see how popular testing is here, and Orange County leaders are bracing for these test results to come in. I mean, this is the first week of this massive testing, and they know we're going to get a lot more positive cases because of it.
Yeah, we'll see that show up in the data here in the days ahead. Brendan Byrne, WMFE Orlando reporter with us via Skype. Thanks, Brendan.
You got it.
Lots of tweets still coming into the Florida Roundup. Yvette tweets, what's it going to take for everyone to do the right thing and stay home? People are getting sick, very sick and dying. She says everyone needs to do their part. Let's go now to Sky LeBron, reporter with WJCT in Jacksonville. Hi, Sky.
Hey, how's it going, Melissa?
So there's been testing going on in Jacksonville for a couple of weeks now. How's that going?
Yeah, there's been thousands of people tested. There's multiple drive-through testing sites, and things are being set up pretty rapidly. Just recently, we found out that Mayo Clinic is going to be setting something up. They've already begun from 8 to 2 p.m. They're testing their own patients. We've seen things from St. Vincent's Ascension. We've also seen things at the Prime Osborne Convention Center, which is located closer to downtown, along with the Lot J site, which is at the Jacksonville Jaguars Stadium. So there's a lot of testing going on, but just like how Brendan talked about, these things are happening rapidly, and they're very limited.
Yeah, still limited. Now, we saw how the patchwork approach worked in our area when Jacksonville and Mayor Lenny Curry here shut down Jacksonville beaches, but in one county south, St. John's, beaches remained open. A picture got shared showing the difference. It was pretty striking.
Yeah, and it showed the county line between Duval and St. John's, and you saw the Duval side that was completely barren, and then the St. John's side that had tons of people packed up. Of course, that caught nationally, and eventually they decided to shut that beach down, and now we're seeing they're having to go along with the executive order that Governor DeSantis has passed. But one thing that we're seeing in terms of a difference from Duval County and St. John's County is St. John's County is still keeping their city parks open as opposed to Duval, which has closed their city parks. The last couple weeks, it's been closed.
Now, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry was ahead of the governor in issuing a shutdown. How is his order reconciling with the state order?
He was ahead by a couple hours.
2 hours.
I'm really unsure if he knew about the executive order that was going to be passed by Governor DeSantis just a couple hours later. But yeah, he had already put into effect something at Friday morning at 12:01. He was saying that there was going to be a stay-at-home order and everything was going to have to be shut down. Non-essential businesses were going to have to be shut down. And one of the confusing things about it now, we've talked about it already, is the local authority versus the government, the state government. How is this going to work in terms of, can you be more restrictive at the local level?
Right. There's still a lot of confusion.
Yeah, and part of that confusion comes with boats and marinas. I think one thing that I asked the mayor yesterday was regarding, can you still go kayaking? Can you still participate in boating activities? And he said yes, but when you look at the government level, they refer to Miami-Dade Executive Order, which says that this is very limited right now. They want to shut down marinas. They want to shut down boat ramps. So it's something that is definitely causing a lot of confusion, not just in Jacksonville, but around the state.
Yeah, these orders may yet be clarified further. All right. Thanks for all of that. He's Sky LeBron, reporter with WJCT in Jacksonville. And this is the Florida Roundup. Excuse me. Sorry. I'll do it. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
John Davis is with us from WGCU Public Media in Fort Myers. John, welcome back to the Roundup. What's testing been like in Southwest Florida?
In the 7-county region of Southwest Florida, say from the Gulf Coast, like Sarasota stretching to Collier, inland as far as the western edge of Lake Okeechobee, there's been a little over 7,000 tests performed. 739 of those have been positive cases. And we have Lee Health, the prominent health provider, hospital health provider in Lee County, has two of those drive-through mobile testing sites that they have been operating for a while now. Mm-hmm. Naples Community Hospital Healthcare System in Collier County has one testing site. They had initially planned on opening two, but after sort of looking at how many actual tests they were going to be able to provide, they just decided that was logistically not going to even be worth it. So there is still just one testing site there, and the health department in Sarasota County is operating another mobile testing site in that area.
What about senior living communities, nursing homes in Southwest Florida, a very popular retirement location, of course? Any special precautions that local health officials are taking with those communities?
Nothing specifically that I've heard, other than we know there have been some positive COVID-19 cases among residents in assisted living facilities, specifically in the Sarasota area. So, of course, you know, they're isolating those residents and, of course, monitoring that situation very closely. But nothing else that I've heard of specifically.
And what about experiences with hospitals and preparations that you're seeing with the medical community?
As far as hospitals, they're kind of doing what they can. Mm-hmm. We do know that Lee Health, they asked the states if they could move up an inspection that they needed to open up a planned expansion of one of the hospitals in Lee County. So now we have 200 additional beds, hospital inpatient beds that we weren't supposed to get for a couple more months. Mm. So that's going to do a lot in terms of if things do get really, really bad here. At the moment, actually, last week, I know inpatient hospital capacity was down from where they usually are in, like, the months of April and March, because it's just high tourist season, and with everything shut down and the spring breakers going back home, yeah. There seems to be some capacity, but of course, they're preparing for the worst.
John Davis with WGCU Public Media with us from Fort Myers. John, thanks for sharing your reporting experiences with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
It's great to hear from reporters, Tom, all over the state, and just little subtle regional differences that we're seeing in the response to this. It's a big state, a diverse state, so it's good to get those perspectives, isn't it?
It certainly is, and to hear, especially from kind of some of the hot spots early on in this coronavirus, as we've seen cases grow in South Florida and how testing sites have been opened up and the kind of demand for testing sites experienced there, and the demand that you're experiencing and hearing from other locations in Orlando and rolling out some test sites in Fort Myers and kind of looking at exactly how the entire state has been responding is pretty tremendous. And that includes, of course, filing for unemployment with tens of thousands of Floridians having difficulty. That's what we're going to talk about next. Have you tried to file for unemployment? 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. That's all ahead on the Florida Roundup. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening to Florida Public Radio this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, the number of jobless claims in Florida tripled to 227,000 last week. As those numbers continue to soar, so does the frustration about the newly unemployed. They've been thrown out of work, and they're looking desperately for financial help from the state's Department of Economic Opportunity. Now, that's the agency responsible for administering Florida's unemployment benefits. People trying to file online, though, are dealing with login problems, error messages, and long waits.
So if you're trying to file for unemployment old school style, like on a telephone, you haven't really fared much better. Callers report busy signals, dropped calls, or being on hold for hours, like 8 hours or more on hold. The number of calls to the state's Department of Economic Opportunity office just exploded this week. The center normally receives about 5,000 calls a week. Well, last week that number was 222,000. Ken Lawson is the director of the agency that receives those calls, and he apologized for the response and made this pledge to out-of-work Floridians.
You can count on us to do everything we can, and we're not going to stop. We recognize there'll be frustrations and difficulties, but regardless, there's a full commitment from me personally and professionally to get you the resources you need from my department.
So have you tried filing for unemployment this week? Already have callers waiting to share their horror stories. The number to join is 305-995-1800, and we'll get a few of your tweets on the air. Lots of people are commenting on Twitter about this at Florida Roundup, too. Lawrence Maurer is a reporter with the Tampa Bay Times and joins us now via FaceTime. Hey, Lawrence.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good to have you. You report the unemployment office got 1.5 million calls in the last week, and people are desperate to sign up for benefits. At the same time, there are other reports coming out from anonymous officials in the Ron DeSantis administration. They are blaming former Governor Rick Scott for this mess. They say he designed the state's unemployment system deliberately to fail. And that is why people, they say, are having trouble accessing benefits. What about that?
Yeah, frankly, this is a system whose problems go back to 2013.
and the initial years of the Governor Rick Scott. And this was a system that he overhauled to basically make it more difficult and not as convenient for people to apply for benefits. Initially it had a slew of problems. I mean, what we're experiencing right now is nothing new. These were things that all came out when this thing rolled out in 2013. There have been a number of audits done since then. State auditors have gone in 2015, 2016, and 2019 and said, look, there are all these problems and nobody's ever fixed them.
Yeah, never fixed them. And so here we are. Just a couple of tweets for you. Here's one from a listener. I'm in Port St. Lucie. I spent 6 hours on the website yesterday. Today, every time I reach the final submit button, it logs me out. This is ridiculous. This is the story we're hearing everywhere. What is Governor DeSantis doing to set up some kind of workaround to help people?
Yeah, well, I should note that the audit last year went to Governor DeSantis pointing out all these problems, and they apparently didn't fix them then. So what they are doing is the system would be stressed out no matter how it was designed, it seems, because of the epic number of claims. However, what they are going to be doing is reverting back to paper applications. Right now, you can only basically apply on the phone or on the website, and neither of those things are functioning well. And so what they're going to be doing is issuing paper applications that you can mail in. And what they're going to do is they're going to hire people, the state is going to hire people to scan those forms in and enter those into the system. That is a somewhat of a workaround, but it doesn't get around the fact that even those people have to enter the system, enter these records into the same system.
Huh.
The system is already overwhelmed, and it's going to be easier for them to manage this doing it this way, but it's still going to really be difficult.
Sure.
And these problems are going to last for weeks.
And we're being told the governor is allowing people to drop off their unemployment applications in person as well. We've got Sean on the line in Mariana. He's been trying to file for unemployment. Go ahead, Sean.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Thank you, Melissa.
Sure.
My boss decided to close the business on 3/15, and then Governor DeSantis' executive order on 3/20 put us closed for 60 days because I'm a massage therapist. We're non-essential health care. I started trying to apply online, and apparently 7 years ago, my Social Security number was associated with a PIN that is now more than 90 days old because it's 7 years old.
Hmm.
And that PIN can only be reset by one office at the DEO. And that number, I've been trying more than 200 times a day to get through for the last 2 weeks with no success.
Oh, yeah. And that's a common problem. Lawrence, you've been reporting on this. What advice do you have for Sean?
Yeah, this is the number one complaint they're getting right now. Of those 1.5 million calls, a third of those were for PIN resets, just like that gentleman. What the state is doing is they've hired a company to provide 250 call takers just to handle PIN resets. And they're also going to be having state government workers from other departments, other agencies to take calls as well.
Should he just keep calling then?
Yes. Yes. What they're recommending right now. Yeah. What they're recommending right now is you call as early as you can. And you try to, if you need to access the website, you do it during off-peak hours, like 11:30 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. But basically, you just have to keep calling. It's the whole situation is a complete mess.
Yeah, it sure is. And this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
305-995-1800 is our statewide phone number. Have you tried filing for unemployment? What has that experience been like? Maybe you've been successful and you are part of the tens of thousands of Floridians that are now counted officially amongst the unemployment statistics. Heidi on line 3 in Miami. Go ahead, Heidi. Please share your experience with us.
Well, I guess my daughter has the same problem as that gentleman that just spoke. She can't reset the PIN. She's trying day after day after day. So my question, now that I'm listening to your show, is where do we get the paper application?
Lawrence, do you know how folks can get the paper application to file?
They're not out yet. They're going to be issuing. They don't have any paper applications yet. They're going to be releasing them sometime soon, I'm told. I was told it could be as soon as today. We have not heard otherwise, or we have not heard basically anything but that. But they're not out yet. They should be out soon, and we will certainly be writing stories about it so people can know how to do that.
And when they're going to be out, is it presumably they would be on the website that folks could just download and print out?
Yeah, that's the idea. We don't have a lot of details about it, but that's the idea.
Ed Lawrence, the federal government is trying to get money to every American, right? And can you explain, if people are unable to access the state unemployment website, they're not eligible as quickly for the federal benefits either. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the federal stimulus package included basically two groups of money to get into the hands of Americans. One of them was the $1,200 just kind of stimulus check that everybody's getting. The other part is $600 per week for people who are unemployed. And these are it includes people who don't qualify for unemployment under Florida's system, like self-employed people, gig economy workers, contractors, things like that. Those people are eligible for the $600. However, you need to use the state system to access that $600. And this is where this really becomes a crisis, because if you can't apply in time, if weeks go by where you can't apply, those are weeks that you don't get any money, including this federal money. So this is extremely serious.
So, Lawrence, we've gotten a few questions about whether or not if folks are unsuccessful in applying now but eventually get through, would the pay be retroactive to when they actually lost their jobs?
There's a question about that. It's not clear. It looks like in some situations, yes, it might work. But if you're a gig economy worker, I don't know how that, if you're a gig economy worker or if you're a self-employed person, I don't know how it works like that.
Let me try to squeeze in one more quick call here. Go ahead, Lawrence.
One thing I wanted to add that's important. The feds also said that they would pay for a wait week. There's in Florida, there's a very arbitrary week from the time you apply. For that first week after you apply, you can't get anything.
And well, we have some of the lowest benefits in the country too. That needs to be said as well.
It's absolutely pitiful. The most you can get in Florida right now is $275.
Let's squeeze in one call from Miami. Allie on line 10. Allie, we've got less than a minute. Go ahead.
Hi there. This is Allie Shapiro, a retired professor from New York, working as a independent contractor on a 1099. I have been successful getting onto the site after many times. I did complete the application, but cannot get confirmation that it has been received. When I go back online, it says not complete. And that not complete does not tell you what it is missing.
Lawrence, any experience with that?
This is another extremely common complaint. This is a complaint that goes back to the very beginning of this website and this system that they never fixed.
So, Lawrence, we're 30 seconds away from the end of the show. People need to wait for the paper applications. That's their own, or keep calling. That's it, right?
Keep calling, keep trying. When the paper applications come out, you can find that on the website. We'll have it at our website, tampabay.com or miamiherald.com.
All right. And Lawrence Maurer of the Tampa Bay Times, thank you so much for this critical information. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that's
welcome.
Our show. It's a serious time. I'm glad we could get this out to the public. Tom, we'll talk to you next week.
Indeed. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are the producers.
Jason Zabka is WLRN's Director of Radio Programming and Technical Director. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Chris Remington answered phones, and theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us this week.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Wash your hands, stay 6 feet apart, and stay at home. And thanks for supporting public media.